Good morning. We're going to talk about Chinese immigrant religious institutions in New York City and their potential role in HIV. I don't have any relationships disclosed, but I wanted to acknowledge our funder, which is the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development. And I wanted to just let you know that I'm co-presenting with my colleague, Minying Li, who is a she has a bachelor's degree in psychology from the State University of New York and a master's degree in social work from Columbia University. And she's also primarily responsible for doing a lot of the recruitment in our study. So just to give you a little bit of background about this study, I've been working in HIV for many years on the service side. And I worked for 8 years at the Asian and Pacific Islander Coalition on HIV/AIDS in New York City, where we provided services to people with HIV and also education in the community. And one thing over and over that we found was that there's so much stigma in the community that creates so many barriers to seeking care, to accepting education. And so we thought, what if we can do something that could reduce stigma? And we looked around at who's influential in the community. We actually did a study of all the different immigrant institutions in the Chinese immigrant community. And we found about 300 of them. This was in 2003. And we found that about half of them were religious institutions. And so we thought, these have the potential to be very influential in shaping values, norms in the community. So why don't we try to see if we can work with them? And so this study is actually a study of kind of resistant organizations in a way, trying to understand what the resistance is on the part of these organizations in getting involved in something that's highly stigmatized and taboo. And there were some surprises in the study. A lot of it was not surprising in terms of how they felt about getting involved in HIV, but some of it was surprising in terms of finding organizations that were somewhat open to being involved in HIV. So I'm going to turn it over to my colleague Minying to talk about a little bit of the methodology and background, and then I'll come back to talk about some of our current results.
Hello everyone. So I'm going to talk about the study method. So our study aim is to identify the barriers and facilitators of HIV involvement among immigrants' religious institutions, specifically in the Chinese community in New York City. And in our phase one, we conduct illumination and telephone survey of Chinese religious institutions. And we randomly select 21 of these organizations into our phase two for in-depth study. All right, and our religious institution database, that's one of the most comprehensive database that currently we have in our study. So we actually generate this database by looking at both paper and online listing and directories. But most importantly, we walk through every single census tracts with more than 1,000 Chinese resided in that neighborhood. And with each identified organizations or religious organization, we also walk one block radius around that organization just to see if there's any other organization that were in the neighborhood. So as you can see from this table, a total of 200 religious organizations serving Chinese immigrants are found in our study. 61% of them are Christian churches, 29% of them are Buddhist temples, and 11% are other Asian religions. So in this study, we are focusing on only Christian churches and Buddhist temples. All right, here is a map of New York City. And zooming up to Manhattan Chinatown, the darker the color you can see on the map actually have more, higher density of Chinese population. And each dot you see on the map represents one religious institution. And as you can see from here, all these religious institutions, they're highly concentrated around high-dense Chinese population areas. And here is a map of Queens. It's a different story than Manhattan Chinatown. These organizations are actually more spread out into neighborhoods that's with less Chinese residents. And here is a map for Brooklyn. That's an emerging Chinatown in New York City. And it's the same case, similar case with Manhattan Chinatown. It's all these organizations are from at the highest density population. And right now I'm going to show you some photos of how this organization actually look like in the community. The photo on top, you may not able to see any religious organization. It's actually on the third floor of a commercial building and in a very busy commercial district in Manhattan Chinatown. And the photo under is a picture of the interior of that temple. And here is a storefront Buddhist temple in a mixed neighborhood in Queens, and the photo under it is also the interior of that Buddhist temple. And here is one of the biggest temple of in Manhattan Chinatown or even in the whole New York City. So as for those who have ever visited Chinatown in Manhattan, it's not likely that you're going to miss this temple because it's located right off Manhattan Bridge. So it's in the center of Chinatown. And then the one on left, the photo on left, it's actually an interesting one. It was actually a temple and it locates in a very strictly residential neighborhood. So and also it looks like just a regular single house. So if you just walk by the neighborhood without looking carefully, you may not notice that it's actually a Buddhist temple. And the one on the right is a brand new 5-story building belonging to a Christian-based organization. And here are two churches in Queens, New York. And here is another church in Manhattan Chinatown. This is an interesting church. We put it here for the purpose just to explain the difference of different organizations that's actually in New York City. This organization, this church, serves mainly new immigrants from Fujian province of China. So during the weekday, if you visit this church, you can see lots of women, children, elderly are actually hanging out at the church as they use the space as a community center. You don't really see many men because usually these men are working outside of the city or even the state, providing for the family. All right, so from all these different pictures, we just want to tell the story that even though these organizations are all religious organizations serving the same population, but they are varied by geographic location, size, and also building structure. And that may help us understand their relationship to the community as well. So we randomly select 21 of these organizations into our phase 2 study for in-depth study. At the time that this paper was written, we recruited 17 out of 21 organizations. 68 qualitative semi-structured interviews were conducted with both religious leaders and court members. For this study, we identified this organization as civic or sanctuary organization based on their hourly direct activities and their philosophy about social engagement. 3 civic and 6 sanctuary Christian churches were identified and categorized. 3 civic and 5 sanctuary Buddhist temples were also categorized for further analysis. So now I'm going to turn over to John for about findings.
So we use this typology of civic and sanctuary to try to do a little bit of analysis of which organizations might be more engaged and which might be less engaged in something like HIV. So for civic, these are organizations that are more engaged in public life. They're working for the social good through dominant and political and social structures, as opposed to maybe an activist organization that might be challenging those dominant political and social structures. And then the other side of it are the sanctuary organizations who are less involved in secular matters and also are really not as interested in what happens in this world. They're more interested in what happens in the next world. And they believe that moral conduct in this world will result in spiritual rewards after death. So we're going to just talk about 4 case studies, 2 civic organizations, 1 Buddhist and 1 Christian, which we're using pseudonyms, Community Welfare Church and Temple of Engaged Buddhism. And the sanctuary organizations, Queens Family Church and Refuge Buddhist Temple. And one thing I wanted to point out is that the two Christian churches in our case studies, they're both evangelical churches. And so a lot of times we think about evangelical churches as being very conservative and not very interested in engaging with social issues in a progressive way, but we find that there is a split among the civic and sanctuary. We can find both types among the evangelical. This typology that we're using is from a researcher of a religion named Alan Mock. And he warns us that we shouldn't oversimplify in using these typologies, that you can find a diverse range of attitudes and behaviors even within specific denominations and specific types of organizations. All right, so just to give you a little bit of a general comparison between civic institutions and sanctuary, compared to sanctuary institutions, civic organizations proactively inquire about community needs, adapt current programming to address identified needs, engage their immediate neighborhood because of their geographic location, and they do tend to be more frequently located in inner city urban areas. Here are just two examples of civic institutions in urban areas. Civic institutions also have greater member diversity based on socioeconomic class, country of origin, and they also have more gender diversity in their leadership. And sometimes that means also not just having women in the leadership, but having both men and women in the leadership, because some of the organizations we studied have been mostly led by women. And they're generally, this diversity tends to increase their receptivity to change and challenging the status quo. So here's a quote from one of the interviews about gender equality. So the same set of rules should be applied to both genders. If gender conflict does occur, it can be easily solved. The solution is to have mutual understanding and to engage in open dialogues to address the issues rather than hiding them. And then as opposed to that, the sanctuary institutions, here's a quote from them about gender equality. We're not ready to have these different social groups. This is about diversity in general. We're not ready to have these different social groups come. Lower class or troubles or issues the church will not be ready for. I guess our church members don't know how to maybe care for them. And in a way, it could be problematic to have their kids mix with our kids. So there is a lot, some fears already about influence and culture already. And their views on homosexuality. So the civic organizations tended to be less critical of homosexuality and also homosexual persons. So here's a quote. My view on homosexuality has to do with someone's private view perception of the opposite sex. And after all, this is a private matter. And the sanctuary institutions, they tend to interpret select biblical teachings as condemnation of sin, including homosexual relations. So this quote, just like any other thing that God sees as sin, thou should not murder, thou should not steal, thou should not lie. The Bible is very strict about that, strictly said that you should have no immoral relationships with men and men and women and women. We also found that the civic institutions had greater sympathy towards people living with HIV/AIDS. I feel after they're infected, they must be very upset and they must be blaming themselves already because they were not careful or they were infected with this disease under situations unknown to them. Actually, to be infected with this disease is really pitiful. I think he's trying to say they're already suffering so much already. We shouldn't add to that. And then the sanctuary institutions tend to be a little bit more judgmental, especially about how the person got infected. So they say half and half in terms of fault. Some of them were looking for prostitutes. If they didn't go, they wouldn't have gotten this disease. After getting it, they blame it on this person, that person. Of course, we should feel sympathy, but if they had thought of it beforehand, they wouldn't have gone there in the first place. The civic institutions were also more receptive in general to participating in an HIV-related program. Some of them expressed that they didn't have much capacity to be involved, but they were willing and eager to participate if they were asked. One of the organizations, the church, asked for HIV educational brochures to distribute at their next block party. And the Buddhist temple actually agreed to host an HIV education workshop that was conducted by an outside group. The sanctuary institutions seem to be more concerned about preserving internal harmony, not raising issues that might create any kind of strife or conflict, and also about avoiding negative community perceptions about their institution. So they say, it might affect our image, but I don't know how we would respond. HIV is taboo. People might be judged for coming here to participate in an HIV program. The civic institutions also seem to have a higher perception, but they perceived a higher need for this type of work in their communities. So they say, I think HIV education is important. The general level of understanding is especially lacking in the Chinese community. The level of acceptance and openness are also very low. The Chinese people are reluctant to talk about this issue. I think it's very important to educate them about it. And with the sanctuary institutions, they tend to say, you know, our members don't need HIV education because they have high moral conduct and the religious teachings protect them. So other folks might need it. So the civic institutions also had a greater perceived institutional susceptibility to HIV in contrast. So they say some of the people with HIV could even be the loved ones of the members themselves. Civic institutions also felt, in some cases, more personally competent to initiate and support the institution in working in HIV. And so this pastor for the Community Welfare Church says, while serving as a minister in Malaysia, I'm sorry, this is a story about him. The pastor of Community Welfare Church had sex workers and several drug users in attendance at his church. And when he sensed that other congregants were unhappy, he approached each member and said, we have to accept them. They're coming to be close to God. We have to support them and we have to accept them. Sanctuary institutions, in contrast, they felt that this is a secular issue and it's culturally untraditional. And of course there are hoodlums who don't want to work or their wives are not here, then they would fool around and be infected. Otherwise, the Chinese people are pretty traditional, only between husband and wife, I think sexual relations, so they wouldn't be infected with this disease. So in closing, just some lessons learned or understandings that we came away with. Both civic and sanctuary institutions identify compassion as a central tenet, so that's an important opening in terms of the whole range of institutions that we've studied. Identification of community needs, including HIV prevention, is influenced by interpretation of religious teachings, membership demographics, diversity, location of the institution, whether in a needy area or not, and also the priorities of the leadership. Religious denomination is not necessarily a predictor of level of interest in HIV involvement. Sanctuary institutions may reach populations that others cannot, so it may be important to work with them even if there might be challenges to engaging them. And finally, working with a wider range of religious institutions means more people can be reached. So it is important for us to find a way to work with a broad range. And finally, if you're interested in learning more, here's our contact information. Thank you.